Okay. Let's sit quietly for a couple of minutes. Let our transition between running around all day and something a little bit more serious with our mind. Okay. So sit straight, put your feet flat on the floor, and your hands are on the back, just touch it. And then check in with your body. See if there's any tension anywhere. If there is, let it go. And then become aware of your breath, letting your breathing pattern be normal and natural. And just observe the breath as it goes in. Get distracted, notice that you've gotten distracted and bring your attention again onto the breath. So don't get mad at yourself for getting distracted, it's quite normal. But don't follow the distractions either, rather return your focus to the breath. And in that way let your mind calm down. Thing that we will listen and share together this afternoon so that we can identify our weaknesses and learn ways to overcome them. So we can identify our good qualities and talents and learn how to enhance them, not simply for our own benefit, but really seeing how interconnected we are with all. Living beings. Let us get involved in this process of self-discovery and working on ourselves for the benefit of all beings so that we can cultivate the compassion, wisdom, and skillful means to be of the greatest benefit to others. Take a moment and place your motivation very firmly within the context of being of service to others. Satisfaction. I looked at the flyer rather briefly. What exactly was that? Do you remember? Are you all expecting me to talk about the three characteristics and impermanence and dissatisfaction and selflessness, suffering? And you come here to hear about all that.
Sure.
Yeah?
I'm just happy to be here. Whatever comes is good for me.
Mm. because we talk about the three characteristics of phenomena, but that's talking about things that within psychic existence. And sometimes if you don't have the whole scope of the Buddhist worldview, then just hearing about these things makes you go, oh my goodness. So it's helpful to have the context for it and to know why we talk about things, you know, being impermanent and what the significance of impermanence is. You know, why we talk about things being unsatisfactory and what in the world is selfless mean. But sometimes, before we get into all of that, it's more helpful for us to learn how to look at our own thoughts, our own emotions, our own attitudes towards life, you know, how we approach things, how we look at things. So who do you think about the most?
Myself.
Good, thank you for being honest. Does everybody else agree?
Yes.
It's like God.
Really, all day long you think more about God?
Yeah.
Than you think about yourself?
Yeah. I come through the Bhakti Yoga group, so...
Hey, you might have to stretch your mind a little bit here because we don't believe in God. So, different perspectives.
Yeah, different.
That's okay.
But you believe in some supreme.
Well, we talk about the Buddha. We talk about the Buddha as being somebody who has eliminated all defects and developed all good qualities limitlessly.
Mm.
Yeah. But we don't, and we respect the Buddha, make offerings to the Buddha. But the Buddha did not create the world, and the Buddha does not manage our lives. We don't have to please the Buddha in order to have good things happen to us. You know, the Buddha is more a role model for what we can become.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, although in Buddhism we do make prayers and requests, the purpose of them, it's actually a psychological mechanism for getting us to see, to focus on what is really important in ourselves and what we really want to develop. Okay? So it's not really a path of worship, it's a path of reasoning, of experimenting and experiencing. In other words, the Buddha, when he talked, he said, you have to listen. He said, listen to my teachings and then investigate them, question them. Yeah, test them out using reasoning. Test them out through your own experience and see if they work. And then come to your own conclusion. So the Buddha never said, you know, I am the supreme being and worship me and just follow whatever I say you should do. So it's a path really where we have to take individual responsibility for our own actions of body, speech, and mind. Yeah? So it might be a little bit different perspective than what you're
mm-hmm.
used to, but that's okay. Yeah, good to look at things from different perspectives.
Yeah, I was from learning about all religions and cultures, and
yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah, because sentient beings have come from many. People have different ways of thinking, and have different needs, and so having one spiritual path and thinking that it's going to meet everybody's needs it's like thinking we only need one kind of food and everybody's going to like it. And that, as we know, doesn't work. Yeah? So, from a Buddhist viewpoint, we say it's quite good, this different path, what is suitable for them according to where they're at right now. And what all the true religions share are teachings on ethical conduct. Yeah? How to abandon harming others. Teachings on love and compassion and forgiveness. And so those kind of things that are so essential to us as human beings are taught by, you know, most of the religions in one way or another. And if people practice that, they live happier, they're more peaceful in themselves, and they live happier with other people too. Yeah, the theology is something else. Theology we can debate. But basic human values, I think most of the religions share. And not only all religions, but in like the Solis Dalai Lama talks a lot about secular ethics. You know, that we have to find a way in modern society to talk about ethics that don't depend on religion. Because not all religions have the same theology. And some people don't believe in any religion. Some people are quite skeptical about religion. I definitely was. Yeah? Or they're skeptical about religious institutions. So we need, you know, some kind of secular ethics that can appeal to everybody. That makes sense to everybody. And I think here is where Buddhism has something very valuable to offer to modern society, because our ethical conduct isn't based on a theology, it's based on being practical, you know, being really practical and observing how the mind works. So it can function no matter what people's religion or philosophical viewpoint is. And I think that's very helpful. So something, for example, like ethical conduct. You know, some people, they hear the words ethical conduct or morality, and they go, yeah. Now somebody's going to tell me what I can do and what I can't do, and that I'm a sinner, and something's wrong with me, and I'm going to hell. Just what I wanted to hear. Yeah. So Buddhism doesn't really approach ethics that way. Yeah. We approach it in the sense of what works to have a happy, peaceful life. Yeah, what works? Well, clearly beating people up and killing them doesn't work if you want to live happy with others. And this is the thing that's so interesting about, you know, the wars that are going on in the world. Because people fight wars with the idea that we will fight in order to live in peace. Now, when I was in college, it was in the middle of, when I was in uni, I have to learn to speak Australian. When I was in uni, it was in the middle of the war. And, you know, they were saying, we're fighting a war so we can live in peace. And I said, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But if you look at you know, world politics, it's still the same philosophy, isn't it? Yeah. We will fight so that we will win because we're the best party. Everybody thinks this way, no matter what subject. And then we will live peacefully. Yeah. But somehow killing and arming people physically doesn't work very well if you want to live in peace. Yeah. It doesn't work on a physical level, you know, in a couple relationship. If there's domestic violence, it's not going to be a good relationship. It's not going to work. You know? And between groups and society, You can suppress other people, but that doesn't mean you're going to live in peace with them afterwards. Yeah? And I think we all know that. Have you had in your relationships with people where you've won an argument and then you felt worse afterwards because the other person was really resentful towards you? So it's not a question of winning, it's a question of learning how to communicate with others, realizing that we all want happiness and none of us want to suffer. And I think that's the basic thing that we all have to really integrate into ourselves. I think you all knew that before you heard me say it, you know? I mean, it's kind of common knowledge, everybody wants to be. The problem is we don't live our lives as if we believe that. We usually live our lives as if we're the only one who wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. And everybody else somehow, they don't matter much. Yeah. And so we usually live our life with, you know, the most important thing is my happiness. You say that? My happiness first. My suffering hurts more than anybody else's suffering. It should be eliminated first and foremost. Immediately. And the universe owes me everything good. I should have everything I want. Everything should go the way I want it to go. Everybody should like me. Everybody should respect my opinions. After all my opinions. Do you think like that?
No, not anymore. I think I had too many other experiences to tell me it doesn't work.
Yeah, sometimes life knocks you around and makes you question.
It's a good idea, maybe, but it doesn't work.
That's the point, it doesn't work. But most of us think that.
Nice, ideally, but not for me, my life.
Yeah, I don't think it's even such a nice luxury that I'm the most important one in the world.
No, I mean being happy. It'd be nice to be happy and things go your way, but it doesn't always work like that. Mm.
Yeah.
I found, maybe I'm different.
Oh, no, that's definitely it. I mean, that's the point. We all want to be happy and we never succeed in getting all the happiness we want. Suffering. We never succeed in being free of suffering either. But I'm talking right now about our attitude towards life. And that we, our main attitude is we think about ourselves and what, you know, what makes me happy and what makes me suffer and take care of yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? I mean, if you're being honest, is that kind of...
Sums me up.
Yeah. Sums me up, too. And then the next layer out is the people I care about, you know? If I care about somebody, then their happiness is important. And I might pay some attention to it, especially if their happiness influences my happiness. But then when you get to strangers, it's like they're, you know, they're kind of like the trees and the, you know, the sculpture and the, they're just things to navigate our way around. You know, when we're with strangers, we don't really think of them as people who have feelings, who want to be happy and not suffering. You know, when you're sitting in a traffic jam, we drove to Sydney today, and parked on the highway. I thought I was back in Los Angeles. And, you know, do you ever look around at all the other cars parked on the highway and say they want to be happy and don't want to suffer? When you're riding the bus, do you think the people around you have feelings that, you know, some of them may be especially happy today and some of them may be quite unhappy? Speaking of unhappy, I'm a little bit cold. Do you think it is? their sleeves when I talk. You do. But what I'm getting at is this outlook we have on life that's so based on me, I, my, and mine. We take it as natural, we look at the world through that perspective, and we think it's going to bring us happiness. But in fact, that self-centered thought brings us more unhappiness. Because the more we focus on me, I, my, and mine, the more we become hypersensitive to everything that happens to ourselves.
Mm.
Yeah? And, you know, because how we experience the world depends on what we focus on. We think we're experiencing an objective world, but we're not. It's depending on what things we pick out to focus on and how we interpret those things, and that's what's going to determine, you know, our experience of life. So if we're just focused on me, I, my, and mine, and perceive the world through that teeny periscope, you know, there's over 7 billion human beings, and if we add all the animals and insects, can you imagine? I mean, trillions and gazillions of living beings. And we view the world through the teeny of one of those. So that what happens to that one becomes of incredible importance. And that attitude brings us some problems. Yeah, it makes us so sensitive to everything everybody says and does, because it's all interpreted from the framework. So we see sometimes how, you know, even the way somebody says good morning, we interpret it from that perspective of me. Why did they use that tone of voice when they said good morning? What do they really mean to say? They're not being very friendly. I know it. Yeah. I know that person doesn't like me. I can tell by the way they said good morning. Okay? Do you ever go into those kind of things? Well, every small thing is self-reference. They chose this room for me to speak in, and you have to walk through some kind of dirty area, you know, and that's where they wanted me to speak, and I know that's because they don't want people to come to my talk. You know? That kind of mind where, you know, of course it has nothing to do with me, but the mind self-references and makes everything have significance to me. So we're super sensitive. Yeah? And then everything somebody does, every way they look, you know, it's like, wow, that's indicating what they're thinking about me, and that's indicating this and that. Okay? So do you get what I mean about how we become super sensitive, and that super sensitivity makes us very prickly, and it makes us very irritable and suspicious. And then, of course, when we're irritable and suspicious, are we happy? No. But the self-centered mind, you know, this is the trick about the self-centered mind. It tells us, follow me and I'll look out for your benefit. And we follow the self-centered mind, and then it leads us to dead ends like that, like being hypersensitive. Okay? So our self-centered mind is not part of who we are. It is not an inherent part of us. Yeah, it's something that can be eliminated. Thank goodness. So, we learn the ways to eliminate the self-centered mind, then there's a way to really overcome it so it doesn't come up anymore. You know? And before we can get to the point of eliminating it totally, we have to, you know, it's a gradual path of slowly cutting away at that self-centeredness. Okay? But we'll find that the more we're able to do the opposite of the self-centered mind, which is cherishing others, the more we're able to do that, the happier we are. Yeah. Although it's quite interesting because now is the society of me. Yeah. Have you noticed everything in society focuses around me? There's a magazine called Self. Yeah. And then there's the iPad and the iPod and the iPhone. Everything is about I. Myself. I mean, people send me pictures of myself. I always think that's quite interesting. Why would they send me pictures of myself when I live with myself? You know? What do I need pictures of myself for? Yeah, because I'm the most important one in the world. That's what the self-centered mind thinks. So I want selfies all the time. And, you know, what do you put on your Facebook page? Really crucially important things like what you ate for breakfast. Because obviously the world is going to be interested in that because I am the most important one. So what I ate for breakfast is really interesting to everybody. Yeah? Okay. And so, you know, you have a Facebook page, and what are you doing on a Facebook page? You're creating an image. Yeah. You're creating an image of what you want other people to think you are. Yeah. So you create, whatever kind of image, how you want to present yourself, that's what you put on your Facebook page. Then you look at other, you know, your friends' Facebook pages, and it's like, wow, they're such together people. You know, because we just look at the, you know, the persona they presented. Yeah, we don't know what's really going on inside of them. We just know what is on the page. Wow, they're such together people. You know, they're so smart, and things are going well for them. And my life, I'm a disaster, you know? Unhappy, picky, depressed. So we compare our own internal experience that only we have access to with other people's Facebook pages, which is the image that they want to create of themselves. And we don't really have access to what's going on inside of them. So we just look at the page. It looks like everything's wonderful. And we compare ourselves to that, and of course, we're less than, aren't we? We're not nearly as good as all those people. Yeah. So better bolster up our own Facebook page and get a lot of new friends and join LinkedIn and have all those people you don't know want to be your friend. Then you can always click, yes, I accept. So that you have so many people who are connected with you on LinkedIn and so many friends on Facebook. And then you must be well-loved and happy and popular. It's really rather stupid, isn't it? Don't you think? And so we feel constantly dissatisfied with ourselves, you know, because the self-centered thought, remember, it's all about me. So I'm not nearly as good as my friends. And, you know, I don't measure up to all these Facebook people and LinkedIn people who have all these references from people who even know them. Yeah. I love that, you know. I got a LinkedIn column. I don't have Facebook. I did LinkedIn so that I could check, you know, when people apply to the Abbey, so I could check on them. That's what I got. Then all these people I don't know want to, you know, join in. And all these people I don't know who know nothing about me, who have never met me, then they click on the areas that I'm good about. They don't even know me. Yeah? And I guess that means I'm supposed to click on the areas that I don't know anything about, saying that they're good back. But I don't do that. So they're probably gonna stop doing that for me. And then I'll just be a failure. So do you see what I'm getting at? How this self-centered attitude, it makes us just go round and around and around in circles about ourselves. And the way we're looking at ourselves isn't even realistic. It's totally made up. I mean, the persona you create on your Facebook page, is that who you are? That's who you are. Anyway, do you know who you are to start with? Well, if we're going to create an image of us, do we know? So actually, if we look inside of ourselves, we're full of all sorts of contradictory qualities. You know, we're happy and we're sad. In some moments we're kind, and some moments we're selfish, and some moments we're peaceful, and some moments we're angry. Some moments were generous and some moments were stingy. Welcome. So we're made up of lots of different qualities. So to even say, you know, who am I, and get an accurate view of ourselves, can we even do that? Okay. So what I'm getting at is that this mind that just wants, is always thinking about me and my life and how I appear, you know, that outlook on the world is a setup for suffering. We're taught that the more we think about ourselves, the happier we'll be. And the more we work for our own benefit, but actually, when you look at the, you know, our own experience, that's not really what happens. Because if we're always thinking just about me and not really respecting other people and not valuing their feelings or their ideas, are we going to have good relationships with others? No. If we don't have good relationships with others, are we going to be happy? No. Yeah. So a key element, I think, in our happiness is having good relationships with other people.